Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. When I think of South Dakota, I think of Mount Rushmore, the Black Hills, Custer's Last Stand, the towns of Deadwood, Lead, Spearfish, and Sturgis, and the Badlands. But I also think about how much of this state has beautifully dark skies with very minimal light pollution. Twice in my childhood, my family took a road trip from Washington State all the way to Iowa. So I've traversed the entire state of South Dakota a few times. And if you've never been there, I promise you it offers some of the most unique things to do in this country. In this episode, we're going to focus on the Badlands, where tonight's guests live. But before you meet them, I'd like to introduce you to the area. First of all, why the heck is it called the Badlands? The indigenous Lakota people called this area Mekosika, which literally translates to bad lands. When the French trappers arrived, they clearly agreed with the Lakota, and they gave it a French name that meant bad lands to travel across. In those days before pavement, travelers found this area very challenging. Rain in the Badlands turns the clay into this wet, slick, and sticky mess, and it makes the area really difficult to cross. Navigating through it was made even more difficult by the jagged canyons and the buttes. And as most people know, even if they haven't been there, the winters are harsh and the summers are hot and dry. Now add to all of this the fact that there are few water sources. The water sources that do exist are often muddy and they're unsafe for drinking. This has historically been a difficult place for people to survive in. So it's not surprising that most evidence of early human activity indicates that the place was used for seasonal hunting and not year-round living. Dozens of indigenous tribes were associated with this area, and perhaps the one that sticks out in your mind the most from recent years are those of Standing Rock. But there are also the Sioux and the Crow, the Lakota, Blackfeet, Northern Arapaho, and a whole lot more. Today, Badlands National Park is a fascinating destination for the curious. The park is filled with dinosaur fossils, hiking trails, wildlife, and night sky programs. However, if you are in this area, there is one thing you absolutely cannot miss, and that is the Badlands Observatory. It's located in Quinn, South Dakota, which is less than 15 miles from the park boundary. And this observatory is owned and operated by two people who have a really deep passion for astronomy and the night sky. Ron Divig founded Badlands Observatory in 1996, and he did it to fulfill his dream of having a professional-grade facility that could contribute to astronomical research and education. He grew up in the super cool town of Deadwood, South Dakota, and then he worked at the University of Arizona in optical sciences. He helped craft the flagship 26-inch Newtonian reflector instrument that was used for the NASA Space Guard program, the NASA Deep Impact mission, and the NASA Stardust mission. Ron got together with Teresa Hofer 20 years ago, and her interest in photography led to developing her skills as an astrophotographer. And she's now the official astrophotographer for the Badlands Observatory, and she helps Ron run the facility. Ron and Teresa made the observatory their permanent home after her retirement in 2018, and now they host nightly stargazing sessions and daytime tours for the many travelers in the Badlands area. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast Ron Divig and Teresa Hofer. Teresa and Ron, thank you for joining me on the Night Sky Tourist Podcast from South Dakota at the Badlands Observatory. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicki. Nice to be here.
So I'm sure that a lot of people have heard of the Badlands. They might not know where that is, but let's start by having you guys tell everybody where the Badlands Observatory is located.
Okay, well, Badlands Observatory is not actually a part of Badlands National Park. It was named after the park because it's in very close proximity. We're actually 14 miles from the western entrance of Badlands National Park. And we're located in the tiny town of Quinn. We have officially 63 residents in our town. Although there are a lot of farms and ranches around in the rural area around us. We're 6 miles east of Wall, famous for Wall Drug. And so we're just a few minutes off of I-90 that goes east and west across South Dakota. So we're pretty easy to find. Even GPS can find us.
63 people. To me, that screams dark skies.
It does. We have beautiful dark skies here. And in fact, the town, when the observatory was being built here, retrofitted all the street lights so that they are full cutoff, and also gave us a switch on the street light that's right outside of our facility. So we turn that on and off when we need to.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it when the community rallies around something that's really amazing. That's fantastic. How long have each of you lived there?
Ron actually bought the observatory property in 1996, and he moved on to it in 1998. And I didn't meet Ron for about 3 years after that. I met him in 2001. And we were actually, we split our time between the observatory and a home in Rapid City, which is about 50 miles away from here. Then in 2018, we decided that we would move to Quinn and establish a residence here actually get the observatory ready to be accessible to the public, which took us a couple of years to do.
So Ron, when you bought this property, was the observatory already there, or did you have it built?
Well, actually, the observatory, just to backtrack, I guess, a little bit, my intention was to set up observatory in order to participate in NASA's Space Guard program, which had to do with the searching and cataloging of near-Earth asteroids. And that's a program that I participated in for several years after I got the observatory built. But obviously I needed dark skies for that. So I had been searching the area. I looked at about 43, I believe, different sites with potential dark skies with possible facility structure that I might be able to fashion into an observatory. And this particular facility became available as a property that it actually started out as a Quinn Community Hospital that had been in operation from about 1950 up until 1968. And since 1968, it had been discontinued as a hospital and had a couple of other uses over the years, but actually had been abandoned for approximately 10 years at the time that I acquired the property. And so then it was a matter of renovating and refurbishing and setting up the property so that it would be appropriate use for an observatory.
I don't know. I have to say that it sounds like the perfect set for a Walking Dead show.
Well, there is that aspect to it. And also, of course, it's quite interesting because over the years, we've, of course, had a lot of visitors at the observatory. And one out of every so many of the people that stop by are not stopping to see the observatory. They're stopping to see where they were born.
Oh. Wow, that's so cool. Now, you've mentioned something here. You talked about these asteroids. And you had mentioned to me previously about discovery of asteroids there. Tell us about that. That sounds really fascinating.
Well, as Ron had mentioned, he was involved in the NASA program for mapping near-Earth asteroids called SpaceGuard. And he did participate in that program for about 10 years. However, in the first few years of participation, he actually discovered, in addition to doing follow-up observations of asteroids that have been discovered by the large survey telescopes, he actually discovered 25 main belt asteroids on his own. He recommended to the Minor Planet Center that, or the IAU, that one of them be named, the first one be named after South Dakota. And they approved that name. And so asteroid 26715 was named after the state of South Dakota. A plaque has been presented to the governor and is in the governor's office in Pierre, which commemorates that naming by the of asteroid South Dakota. And since then, to follow up with a couple of the naming, other naming things with South Dakota and related, is that the town of Deadwood, where Ron grew up, also has an asteroid name for it that Ron discovered. And the town of Quinn, just this year, got an asteroid named after it, which was discovered here.
That's so cool. I love those kinds of stories. I live in Fountain Hills, Arizona, and we had an amateur astronomer who discovered like 300 and something asteroids from his backyard observatory here. And so our town has an asteroid named after it as well. It's so cool.
It's very cool. And people love this story. And of course, we love to tell them that we have South Dakota floating around in space above us. It's safely out of harm's way. We don't have to worry about it falling on our heads, but it's still very cool to have a piece of South Dakota real estate up there.
How big is it?
It's in the 2 to 3 mile diameter category. So it's certainly not one that we would want to encounter physically.
Right. What kind of programs do you guys offer at the observatory?
Well, we, like we were saying earlier, for many years, the observatory was strictly used for research, and there were very limited public visits to the observatory, only by private arrangement. But the research that was done here is a whole different discussion. But since we opened the observatory to the public, we now offer public tours. We offer a daytime tour where people can come in and they can look through our specially equipped telescopes at solar prominences with a hydrogen alpha filter. We also have a telescope that we equip with a white light filter so they can see sunspots on our back observing deck. We have a couple of radio telescopes here so they can observe Milky Way emissions, hydrogen emissions from the Milky Way galaxy as our scope is set up to drift scan across it. We have a small radio telescope on our back deck that measures radiation emission from the sun. And then at night we do stargazing tours. So we have people that come and we do a presentation of what we do here at the observatory. We give them access to two small exhibit galleries that we've set up here. And then we like to educate people on the difference between looking through a telescope visually and what you are able to capture with a camera sensor, which is so much more sensitive, obviously, and can produce these wonderful images that we are graciously supplied with by NASA and all the wonderful research that has been done by NASA and by the Europeans as well, European Space Agency. So we like, but people, a lot of people buy a backyard telescope for Christmas and they don't really know what they are getting into. And a lot of them expect to look through a telescope and see these beautiful images. So we do a presentation for them, which is essentially a live stack of a deep sky object that we do using our telescopes and cameras here up in our dome area. And we show them, this is what you can expect to see. And this is, you know, this is what it would look like after stacking various high sensitive camera images on it. So we like to do that. And then once prepared, they actually really appreciate then the difference. And they really appreciate that much more the light that they can see coming through the scope visually. So after that, we take them out back on our observing deck. We have a 2,500 square foot observing deck. We set out 9 telescopes back there, and we do some visual observing for deep sky objects and the planets and moon and the moon. So we do about a 2 to 2.5 hour tour with our stargazing program.
I like what you said there about setting expectations for people. When I first got a telescope and was doing stargazing things with people, and Saturn finally came in view, and I just remember every time I would look at Saturn through my telescope, which only has a 6-inch mirror on it, so, you know, it's pretty tiny in there, I would look at it and I would just be overwhelmed. I just felt it was so breathtaking to me, even though it was this tiny little thing. But I always was concerned that people would step up to the telescope knowing that they were about to look at Saturn and have images from NASA in their head and then be disappointed. But I would never say anything. And I'm always amazed. People will always step up there, look through it and go, oh my God, is that real?
Yeah. It's true. And Saturn is just one of those, you know, the planets are just so wonderful to for people to see, and especially yeah. Saturn with the rings. Mm-hmm. So we know exactly where you're coming from with that. And we've actually had people say to us, did you take a picture and just paste it on the end of the scope? Because that looks so real.
I hear the same thing. People ask me, is that just a sticker? And yes. I always tell them, well, you got me. Yes, I spent all this money on a telescope, but I just put a sticker there. I love Lowell Observatory here in Arizona. They recorded people making comments when they were looking through the telescope at Saturn. And one person looked through and goes, yep, it looks just like the emoji.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Well, we've discovered, as you suggested too, that, you know, the planets, Saturn, Jupiter in particular, and the moon, will pretty much live up to their expectations when they look through a backyard telescope. However, when it comes to fainter objects, the galaxies and nebulae and that sort of thing, we're accustomed to seeing these fabulous, you know, Hubble pictures and everything. And NASA doesn't really share with the public very much on the details on how those images were obtained. And so consequently, it's pretty difficult to compete with that sort of a thing through a backyard telescope. But we have discovered through the procedure that Teresa just mentioned, by just providing them a short live stack and illustrating how these images can be accumulated that way. And then we show them a fully processed image that we've done. Then when they go out and look through that same image through a telescope, they're elated, you know, as opposed to being disappointed, because they now understand the difference between the reality of visual observing and actually image capture with the camera system. And it really has been very effective for us.
That's a great idea. Just a great idea. And there's just something about looking through telescope and seeing something out there and having that overwhelming sense of awe that I'm looking at that real living thing with my own eye. It's so cool.
Right.
Very, very much so. And that is the feeling that people come away with too. And we were at first a little bit afraid to show them, you know, to go through this process and explain it to them. And we were quite surprised and very delighted to find that it had the opposite effect, that they really appreciated it and had that much more enjoyment of actually doing the visual observing part.
I'm curious, because of your location, if most of your visitors are people who live in the area, or if you get a lot of tourists.
Most of our visitors are tourists. Of course, we just opened to the public in September of 2021. And so we've just finished a first full year of operation as a public facility. We are listed with the Black Hills and Badlands Tourist Association. And we started this with the idea that most of the people that came here would be tourists looking for things to do in the Black Hills. And of course, night sky tourism is so very popular now and gaining in popularity, which we're very, very glad to see.
We're on one of the main tourist routes east-west via Interstate 90, which serves the Black Hills and Badlands area. And of course, that's very close to other very, very famous attractions such as Mount Rushmore, Wind Cave National Park, Jewel Cave National Park, Custer State Park. And so it's a very, very popular tourist area to start with. So we have access to several million people that are traveling fairly close by. And so we are participating in some of that type of tourist traffic.
I'm glad you brought that up about the other things in that area, because I know that a lot of people who have never traveled to South Dakota or have never thought about traveling to South Dakota probably don't realize just how much there is to do in your area. First of all, the drives are scenic like crazy in that area. And then tell us a little bit about some of those towns around there. You've already mentioned Deadwood. You've mentioned Wall. I know that there's a lot of cool things about visiting some of these towns.
Yes, well, there are. Just about every town in South Dakota has something unique. And if your guests are looking for information about traveling through South Dakota, there's a website, travelsouthdakota.com. We're listed there, as well as many, many other thousands of attractions that are across the state. And one thing that is actually really growing right now in popularity is, in addition to the astrotourism, is also agritourism. And since we are such a big agricultural state, we have a lot of tourists that come by and they want to stay at a bed and breakfast at a ranch or a farm. And they want to experience some of the things that are done daily on a ranch or farm. And so that also, and of course, the skies are very beautiful at those places at night. And so that is also an area that's really growing in popularity. And our state is taking advantage of actually promoting that in a big way now.
Well, Ron and Teresa, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us. And when I told my husband that I was going to be chatting with you, I told him it's time for us to go on a vacation up there. I've been there 2 times before we got married. He's never been up in that area. So it's time.
Oh, a lot of people are really surprised, you know, because they think of South Dakota as primarily being blizzards in the winter and just prairie in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that particularly out in the western part of the state with the Black Hills area, it's really a majestic area. A lot of our tourists think that it's a well-kept secret, but it's becoming less of a secret.
Well, I'll help you spread the word.
Thank you very much. We certainly hope that we'll get to meet you at some point. That would be absolutely wonderful.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, thank Vicky. You.
If you love cultural astronomy like I do, you'll want to check out episode 36 of the Night Sky Tourist podcast. In that episode, I interviewed Dr. Craig Howe to talk about Lakota star knowledge. Dr. Howe is a member of the Rosebud Sioux tribe, which is one of the tribes associated with the Badlands National Park. Dr. Howe talks about some of the Lakota star stories that have survived the centuries, and he talks about the year the stars fell. You can find a link to the episode at nightskytourist.com/36. That's nightskytourist.com/36.
Sometimes I come across something really cool online that feels somewhat adjacent to my night sky passion. And when I do, I think, hey, it would be great to share this with my audience. So I'm thrilled to share with you today one of my newest discoveries, and it's a website and Instagram page called Big and Little Parks. I love the focus on national parks and even night sky experiences at the national parks. But I'm going to let Katie, the founder, tell you about it. So Katie, welcome to the Night Sky Tours podcast.
Hello. I'm really happy to be here. It's been great listening to some of your other podcasts. I know I've already bought some of the children's books you've talked about. I started off doing just journals for national parks, and then I've kind of started doing art. So it's kind of evolved, and that's how I've gotten to Big and Little Parks. I've been focusing on night skies and the dark sky parks in the art aspect of Big and Little Parks.
So your journals, they're designed for like the passport stamps, right, at the national parks?
Oh, yeah. The journals I make are designed to work with the passport stamps for the national park. The passport stamps, you can get them in a binder setup at the national parks. And I've made my pages so that they'll fit specifically in with those binders. I think it's the collector's edition. But the nice thing about it is that I have not listed the name of the parks. I haven't made it specific to a national park. I've tried to keep it a bit generic so that if you want to, you can use it for a state park or a local park or, you know, the national park. So you can take this national park binder and you can supplement it with these park pages so that when you're deciding, oh, I'm going to stop at some state parks on my road trip, you can put them in there. And these pages are journal pages too, because part of what I didn't like about the passport binder was I wanted to collect the stamps, but I also wanted to journal a little bit about the parks, and that wasn't really available anywhere. So I made these pages to supplement it. Also, I wasn't really interested in collecting the stickers. They have these stickers that you have to buy at the gift shop. And I'm like, I just want the free stamps. Mm-hmm. I want a journal. And I started doing it because I went with my dad to parks. And now that I have a daughter, I'm sharing that park experience with her.
And I know that you have told me that you've had some really cool night sky adventures. You live out on the East Coast. So tell us a little bit about that.
I live in Maryland, but I grew up in Virginia. I only recently moved to Maryland. Yeah, growing up, the night sky was always something I was really interested in, and I shared with my dad. It was a little hard because, you know, we were in an urban area, although you can really tell just from when I go home, you know, we used to be able to see the Milky Way. Cannot see the Milky Way anymore. Yeah. And it's been a tremendous boom in density around where I grew up. I've been really interested in visiting the dark sky parks since I found out about them. I didn't realize that some of the parks that I went to when I was younger were dark sky parks. I just thought they had some astronomy programs and were great parks. So as I got interested in that, I was like, it'd be really cool to have a map with all the parks on the East Coast on it for the dark sky parks. And I was looking online and I didn't see anything. I kind of wanted it in the same reason that I have a poster on my wall of all the national parks, and you kind of mark those off as you go. I wanted something like that for the dark sky parks, but there wasn't anything. And so I decided to draw all the dark sky parks and create this map with little clips of art from each one. I just finished it in November. Of the parks on the East Coast, there's 14, and five of them are in Virginia. So Virginia's got a lot of dark sky parks in it, and I'm almost done visiting all five in Virginia.
And you have an Etsy shop too. You create like these super cool stickers. And honestly, I've really never been into stickers, but recently I've been buying, you know, these water bottles where people keep touching them and moving them. And I'm like, maybe if I put some stickers on it, people realize it's not theirs. So now I kind of am getting into the sticker thing finally, but you've got some really cool ones and they're mostly related to national parks, right?
Yeah, they're mostly related to national parks or the dark sky parks.
Well, I love your stuff and I really want people to visit your website, and I'm sure your website takes people to your Etsy shop where they can look at the things that you have for sale
And I also really want people to follow you on Instagram because your Instagram page is really fun. I love it.
Yeah, they can follow me at Big and Little Parks on Instagram. And then my website is bigandlittleparks.com.
And I'll have the links to all of those in the show notes as well. And Katie, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate you taking some time with us.
Yeah, this was great. Thanks so much for having me on.
So check out the show notes for the links and find Big and Little Parks online or visit nightskytourist.com/57. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it in your podcatcher and leave a written review. Your reviews are really important to me and they help others discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. We'll see you here again in 2 weeks. Until then, keep looking up.